This Human Capital podcast is brought to you by GoalSpan, a performance app that helps you manage feedback and goals, run reviews and surveys, and align your workforce around what's most important. Our AI-driven performance management insights help anticipate trends, celebrate peak performance, and get employee-specific coaching guidance for one-to-one meetings. GoalSpan ensures your data privacy with responsible AI. To learn more, go to GoalSpan.com. Welcome to the Human Capital Podcast. I'm Jeff Hunt. Have you ever felt like your team isn't quite clicking the way it should? Despite you hiring great talent, there's something missing when it comes to collaboration, engagement, or performance. What if there's a way to decode what drives your employees, better aligning them around your company goals, and building teams that not only work together, but thrive? Today, we're diving into the science behind hiring, team dynamics, and leadership with someone who knows this space inside and out. She's a leader in talent optimization and workforce analytics, helping organizations unlock the full potential of their people through data-driven strategies. Jackie Duby is the Chief People Officer at the Predictive Index, a company at the forefront of talent optimization and behavioral science in the workplace. With extensive experience in HR strategy, workforce planning, and leadership development, Jackie helps businesses align their people strategy with their business objectives. She's passionate about using behavioral data to create high-performing teams, improve employee engagement, and help leaders make smarter people decisions. In my conversation with Jackie today, we're going to explore the power of talent optimization, how behavioral insights shape hiring and leadership, and the practical steps that companies can take to build a workforce that drives results. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show and grateful and thankful that you're giving me this time and just looking forward to diving into this topic. I want to start with a little bit about you. You've been with the Predictive Index a long time, and I'm finding myself curious about two things. One is, first of all, how you ended up as a thought leader in this space, and number two, ultimately in this role at PI.
Sure. So I could talk about this stuff all day, so I'm super excited to have this conversation. And I'll give you a little background on how I even got into the people space and how I got to PI, which when you say a long time, it's the longest job I've ever had. So for me, it feels like a long time, but a good long time. So I've always wanted to be a marriage family counselor. And this really stemmed from my childhood in where my parents got divorced when I was young. But my parents were both supportive. I had never felt it negatively impacted me. And I felt like, wow, I have a positive experience from a divorced home. And I'd love to take that experience on how to make a positive impact on people maybe going through it in a difficult way. So I went to school and then I moved to Boston to go to get my master's, because you have to get a tremendous amount of school to do that, and found myself in a space where it just wasn't working for me. And I went to a recruiter and said, I really love working with people and helping people, but financially I couldn't afford it at the time. And this recruiter said to me, like, why don't you think about human resources? And I didn't really know what it was at the time. And I landed a job as back then a department secretary at a law firm. And that was my first introduction to HR in a very tactical way. But I really got to see the role that HR can play in an organization. And from there, I just like grew into the field. I worked for a company after that acquired 19 companies while I was there. So a tremendous amount of experience just by the nature of the company in culture integration and the importance of values and thinking about people and how they interact through all those acquisitions and so forth. And so many years later, I started working in startups. And then I met a gentleman named Mike Zani, who's our current CEO. He had just finished an acquisition in Detroit and moved to Rhode Island, where I reside now, and was the CEO of a company that had 10 people. He was hired to raise money, do a Series A, grow the business for these founders who had bootstrapped their company. And he went to the founders and said, hey, I'm going to hire HR. And they said, why would I hire HR? We have 10 people. Like, we have engineers to hire and way better things. And Mike had said, you know, I just finished an acquisition or a project where I acquired a company with 150 people. And it's really hard to fix a company. It's really hard to make those changes. And I vowed to myself, if I ever had the opportunity to restart a company, I would hire someone in the strategic HR role first, because we can build the company intentionally the way we want to do it. And so he convinced them to hire me. And Mike and I grew that company together. And at that time, that's when I was first introduced to the predictive index as a tool. And I had never used behavioral science in hiring or any of my work prior, and really understood through that experience the value of having behavioral science to help guide how you hire, how you inspire your employees, how you build your teams, and how effective it can be. And I think you had mentioned it earlier, in decoding humans and decoding the workplace, because it's so complex. And so after that company, I went on my own, Mike went on his own, and then he had the opportunity to acquire the predictive index for many reasons. And I got to have my dream job, where not only do I get to help Mike build a company again, but I also get to be part of the product, where in the people space, we're generally servicing the company, but really being a part of the product development and kind of a guinea pig and get to espouse the product. It's really have been a truly dream that, as I mentioned, I've been here for about 10 years, which is the longest tenure that I've had in my career.
So. Yeah. Well, clearly there are good reasons for that. So that's great. Now, was there any one person or people that really inspired you along the way?
Yeah, you know, I would say probably one of my first managers at the company where I had mentioned where we acquired all of these, where we made the 19 acquisitions, because her name is Nancy LaBierre, was one of the most people-centric managers that I've had, and so thoughtful, and took the time to ensure that, you know, culture and people were taken care of, and the importance of even self-awareness and transparency. And I think at that time, all of those buzzwords probably were not top of mind. But if I look back, she's definitely had the largest impact on my career in the way I think about talent.
Mm-hmm. Now, talent optimization sounds like a mouthful to a lot of people. And so it's really a term that I think we're hearing a lot more often these days. So the question is really, how would you define talent optimization? Because I think people define it differently. And then secondly, why is this something that's so critical for organizations today?
Yeah, so I think talent optimization is the discipline of aligning your people strategy with your business strategy. And that really is what drives results. So it's not just about hiring the right people, but it's about understanding how to engage, develop, retain them. And all of that is in an effort to maximize productivity. And so I think as organizations in this world climate, we're required to adapt quickly to change. And talent optimization gives organizations insights into the talent that they have internally so they can maneuver quickly. Because if they don't have those understandings and they're consistently looking for like someone to fit this job description, specifically with these skills, they're very stuck in how they can adapt to the changing needs of their business. And, you know, they're going to just fall behind from their competitors.
It's almost like the way you're describing it is ultimately better visibility for organizations, better vision around their people. Obviously, there's vision around corporate vision and where we're going as an organization. But better clarity and vision around people and what's important, what we need and why. Is that right?
100%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when you think of this whole concept of behavioral data, what role does behavioral data play in talent optimization and making better hiring and leadership decisions? So kind of dumb it down for us, if you will, for the listener.
Sure. So behavioral data gives companies a scientifically backed understanding of how individuals work, how they communicate, and how they lead. So when companies use behavioral data to hire, promote, build teams, they really minimize like guesswork, and they become more successful in not only how they're hiring, but how people are performing in their day-to-day. So for example, if you had a fast-growing technology company, which PI has been, and if you're struggling and have higher turnover in leadership roles, and you implement something like a behavioral assessment, you can identify where there's misalignments between personalities of leadership, potentially with companies' strategic goals. And so when you have those insights, you can make adjustments of who you need to hire. Are there better people suited to that organization's pace and structure? So when you use those types of insights, you can really get more engaged employees, better leadership, have reduced team turnover, and then just things are more cohesive. And hopefully in the end, you end up with stronger business outcomes.
It's almost as if you're saying that behavioral data and this whole talent optimization strategy is proactive. And so without it, we become reactive. I'm thinking about that. About, is it Mike that you joined with originally?
Yep.
Yeah, Mike. When you did that startup, it's like him recognizing the investment in HR is truly a proactive play that many people miss. And so they fill their organizations in an unintentional way, and then they have unintentional results that come out of that. Is that an accurate statement?
100%. And it's an evolution. So it's not something that like, oh, realize today that we need this. And you just can continue on that way for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You need to make adjustments and continue to see like, what are we trying to achieve in this current environment? So you can make those adjustments. And so an example of that is small startup company. You need to find people who can wear many hats and can work in a fast-paced environment and can multitask. But as your organization evolves and becomes more structured and you actually have processes and you become more complex, you actually need people that can implement those processes and work within a structure. And if you continue to just hire as you did in the forefront of your company, you're going to find unengaged people because they want to innovate and work on multiple things. But you have these people that we have a process to follow in order to serve our customers in this way. So it's something that is an evolution you have to continue to work on and have insights to your organization and what you're trying to achieve.
I love that. Yeah, I was actually, I facilitate a group of CEOs, a mastermind group monthly, an in-person group. And last week we met. And one of the things we were talking about was the IKEA founder syndrome, which is when you're a founder of a startup and you're putting the IKEA furniture together. But if you're still doing that in 5 to 10 years, you know that you haven't shifted.
Right. Right.
That evolution. So that's kind of what you're describing, isn't it?
100%. Yes. And that's a great analogy that I will probably use one day. So yeah. That's okay.
Exactly. So going back to the predictive index, can you think of some examples or stories of how predictive index has really helped organizations transform their teams with what you've just described?
Sure. I think that when you understand a behavioral insight, when you understand what your team is trying to achieve, and you can identify kind of like where the gaps or what the struggles are, you can fill those gaps. And working with companies, wherever they are in their life cycle. So if it's a company that is starting to hire, right, you can help them to understand who they're hiring. If it's a company that is struggling with productivity or high turnover, you can work on things like, are people in the right roles? Do we need to make some adjustments? And if you're not sure why, you can diagnose that, right? So you can say, let me take an engagement survey and understand the experience that the people are having. So then we can put some actions into place. And Predictive Index helps with all of those things. And when I think one of the biggest transformations that we've helped companies with is when leadership takes an investment in the behavioral science and takes a moment to be more self-aware, like who am I and what are my behaviors and how are those impacting the company, the people we work with, to make adjustments that way, you see a real transformation.
Yeah, it's almost as if you're eliminating the chance for hypocrisy by doing that, right? Because we have to, as leaders, really buy into these things that we are professing as being so important. So if we don't do that, we can have problems on our hands, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times I think it's very eye-opening when leaders don't realize the impact that they're having on their people. And a lot of times some of the disconnects or the interpersonal problems or relationships are blamed on a personality difference or someone's performance. And a lot of times it's just a behavioral work style difference. And if you can understand the tension in those work styles, usually you can uncover and make adjustments. And so I can give an example, and I'll use Mike since we're talking about him. But when I first started working with him, so Mike is someone who what we call is like high dominance. So he's very strategic. He likes to put his fingerprint on things. And so when I first started working with him, of course, he's the CEO. I would like work so hard to get things to perfect and spend a lot of times making sure that I gave him a finished product. And what I learned over time is that no matter how finished and how perfect was, like he wanted to put a little bit of his own fingerprint and stamp on it. And it was more stylistic. It didn't change the outcome of actually what I was handing over. And so what I realized is like, don't go to 100%. Give it to him 95% because he's going to make some changes. And that just that little bit of awareness between the two of us like really helped us work better together because I wasn't frustrated that he was changing things that were not like necessarily making a huge impact, but, and he had the opportunity to put his mark on it. And it was like a tremendous value that I take with me today. And I actually tell our coworkers and people that reported to him the same thing. So
what I like about that example is that you're sharing with us that it's not this massive effort that is required to affect change. It's actually just little things that can be tweaked that can have an overall large impact, right?
Sure. And those are the things that cause the most frustration with people. And it's really just about awareness. It's not intentional. It's not one person's right or wrong. It's just different work styles.
Right. And I'm also thinking too about this whole hypocrisy and alignment issue. And I don't know if you saw on the news yesterday, but Meta is laying off a bunch of people. I think it's over 3,000 people. And there are a number of people, and of course, I'm not here to make any claim about accuracy or who's right or wrong, but there are a number of people that had very good performance reviews, and the company's line is that they were laying people off purely based on performance and the result of their performance reviews. So there is definitely an opportunity to do things differently or explore where there's misalignment in that case as an example, right?
100%. And I think that's where actually my team and I spend a lot of time in those like performance review type conversations, because a lot of times it's not, there's either a miscommunication or some type of misalignment, and it's the communication style or it didn't quite get there. So a performance review is like one piece of information. And so, yes, I think 3,000 people on performance review would seem very like shocking thing to do, but
yeah,
my opinion.
And it's also, there's both what is accomplished, which is so often the performance review is hyper focus on results orientation, but then there's also how things are accomplished. Can we get along with our team members? Are we really contributing? Are we collaborative? Are we respectful? Are we creating a place for psychological safety? And when it seems as though, and I'm curious about your reflections on this, Jackie, if you're overweighted on the what versus the how, that's sometimes when you can run into problems as well.
Sure. I would agree with that, because there are ways to get things done that are not collaborative, that steamroll, that take credit for other people's work. And when you focus just on the what, then you become a very like, probably a little bit of a toxic environment. And I think when you're basing a layoff on a performance review, then you have this tool, right, that is being used. And now it turns into the factor for your job security. And then you have people like fearful to give an employee their real performance rating because it's going to impact their job for the future. So I think it's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I want to go back to something you said a minute ago about surveys and obviously Predictive Index has some amazing surveys, and my software, Goldspan, also does surveys in addition to performance management. But I'm curious about your opinion about what you've seen happen when employees are surveyed, but then they're essentially ghosted after the fact. So in other words, they've taken the time to put in meaningful information and feedback to the company about whatever the query is. It might be engagement, it might be something else.
Yep.
But then the organization is not returning back with information about what they found, what they're going to do with it, how they want to address any potential gaps or challenges.
Yeah. And I think that the advice would be, if you're not going to report back or do anything as a leadership with survey data, then you're better off not doing it. It actually creates more disengagement. And so my advice to a company that does survey is to plan how you're going to use the data and how you're going to report back on it before you even take it, before you even distribute it. It should be part of the mechanism in which you roll out the survey, right? So we're going to do this survey to the company. You should expect feedback a month from now. Well, they're going to give you the initial feedback 2 months from now. We'll put an action plan. And then over the course of the year, we'll let you know the changes we've made based on. And it's that simple, but it's very missed by a lot of organizations.
Yeah, they seem to like to just make it event-based and check the box and then move on, when what you're describing is where transformation can occur.
Yeah, and I think additionally, just one level deeper, is even get the data, but then excuse it away, right? Well, people are disengaged, but this happened, or people are disengaged and that leader, but their leader's not here anymore. And it's easy to do that. Sometimes my first reaction is like, you're kidding me. We've tried so hard. And at PI, traditionally, we've had amazing engagement scores. And last year, we actually saw a dip, and we went through some hard things, and it would be very easy for us to excuse that away. But we had third party come in. We went through focus groups. We put an employee advisory council together, and we worked so hard on it as a leadership team with employees, and we just ran our latest engagement survey this year. We're starting to see improved results even through a hard year. So even if you're going through hard things, the investment in time and with employees is so worth it.
And truth telling builds trust, right? And it's all founded on trust. If we don't have 100%. Trust, then that's the ultimate currency. And that's when turnover goes up. If trust is down, we have all these other issues that happen. So
100%.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about leadership and confidence a little bit for a minute. To be a leader requires a level of confidence in most roles. And yet there are plenty of men and women that struggle with imposter syndrome. So there might be somebody who's newer in a leadership role, or maybe has some family of origin issues that are preventing them from really embodying that level of confidence and resulting in imposter syndrome. And so I'm wondering if you have advice for leaders who may hesitate to use their voice.
Yeah, I mean, I personally can speak from that experience. I would say at PI, and this wasn't a factor at PI, but you sometimes work around very smart people. And especially being in HR, you have a seat at the table, but do I deserve this seat? Should HR really speak up on this business issue? And we actually had a speaker come in to talk about confidence for women in the workplace, and just talked about all the ways that imposter syndrome shows up and how women tend to not speak up or just disclaim their credibility by saying, this is a stupid question, which I do all the time. And I committed to myself that every time that little voice came in my head, that I would just go for it. And I would raise my hand, I would say what I had to say, and you realize, wow, somebody else was thinking the same thing or didn't think that way. And so I think diversity of perspective is so important, and every voice matters. So my advice would be to try and, one, quiet the voice and have the courage to go past it. But second is find an accountability partner. So someone that works closely with you, that's in a lot of meetings with you, that you can help, you know, have them hold you accountable. So in a meeting, and this is what I did with a coworker of mine, is if they didn't see me raise my hand, make sure that they called on me. Jackie, what are your thoughts? So I would have to do that. And so it does take practice. It takes getting out of your comfort zone, but you're in a leadership position because you deserve it. So people are expecting your voice. And so that's how I did it. And I would just recommend to find a way to hold yourself accountable, whether it's with a partner or however you can do it, is to find that way.
I love that concept of the accountability partner too, because an accountability partner is your advocate and has your back and gives you the opportunity to not only check in with you on that, but go a little bit deeper about, were there things that you didn't say that now when you reflect back on, you could have said that would have actually had a greater impact on the organization had you spoken up? So I really love that strategy. Yeah. I'd like to shift and talk about the changing workforce that we're seeing now, especially with the rise of AI. And obviously, post-COVID, remote work is still very strong. We've seen a lot more hybrid work. We've seen employers that have actually required return to office. And how does all of this impact organizations as they're wanting to adjust their approach to talent strategy?
Yeah, so I think that for the dynamic workplace that we're in today, and I think that people are, and organizations have to change the way that work is getting done. You know, when I think about AI, there's a lot of fear about AI replacing jobs. But I think the way to think about it is AI is your partner. So how can you use AI? Because it's not going to go away. I don't think it will necessarily replace most jobs. And so how does it make your work better? How can you use it? And I think organizations who explore that will win. And as far as like the hybrid workplace is hiring for adaptability, I think that talent optimization helps that. Not, I think skills are important for certain jobs, but really like looking at the bigger picture, the whole person that comes to work. You know, when we think about talent, the only thing we compromise on is skills. So we hire for people who are curious and smart and for people who have a good attitude. Skills when necessary, but that's the only thing we'll compromise on. And we've been able to shift people all across our organization. We have engineers. Our director of engineering came into our organization as product marketing. And we went into an engineering role and is now the director of engineering. We just had two of our leaders in our sales organization leave between December and January. And we were able to move our VP of product design over to lead our sales organization. Not that sales skills were top of mind for that person, but we know she's a great leader. She understands how the business runs. And so you really can be dynamic. And so understanding how people are wired, using talent optimization in your organization. I think the whole FaceTime versus performance is key. So if you're measuring people by how many hours they spend in their office versus the output, now this takes a lot of, I think, good management and leadership to know how to measure outcomes and so forth. But if you can get to a performance-based environment, the FaceTime becomes less important. And then you're hiring people, you hire adults, right? So treat them like adults and let them manage their time so they can get their life done and also produce the highest quality work. Those are the organizations that are going to win, that are going to get the innovative people because you're treating people like adults and you're getting the outcomes that you need. And so I think those are some of the things that I would encourage organizations in this changing environment.
I really want to highlight a couple of things you said that just feel so important. And one is how critical it is to be proactive in this recruiting strategy and recruiting on character versus weighting character more than weighting skills. Because how many times have you and I probably seen organizations that have a talent void or vacancy combined with a sense of urgency? And they hold out for very specific a very specific skill set, and they bring on the person that might not be in alignment with their core values, and they degrade their culture as a result of that decision, rather than bringing on somebody that might not have the exact skill set that they're looking for, but then developing that person and truly helping their culture and their core values flourish.
100%. And I think that like one bad seed, right, can create so much toxicity. So I do believe that value alignment and attitude is so important. And in most organizations, even if you have a skill set, you have to learn how the organization runs and how that's half of the battle when you hire someone. No one comes in and can like dysfunction immediately. And so that's why we work in a complex environment in terms of our technology, understanding our science, so forth. And we're like, if we can move people around and they understand our business and our science and our methodology and they believe in it, like we can get around the rest. And that's just as important. So
for people listening that really are new to talent optimization and using data-driven strategies, what is the first step they should take?
Yeah. And I mentioned this earlier, it's self-awareness. And I do think that the first step is understanding yourself and how you impact those around you. It's really eye-opening. And if you start with yourself and you bring in your leadership team and you're all understanding how you work together and how you're impacting your team, it's a great place to start. And I guarantee you'll start to see differences around your outcomes and how the engagement in your organization is impacted.
And I'll just add to that, that it ends up being a much more enjoyable work environment when you do that anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can also like then talk about it, right? It's like, we call, like I mentioned before with Mike and his high A, I'm like, that's your high A rearing. And it's now about the behavior and not the person. So it's just so much easier to talk about and get through those conflicts or whatever it may be.
100%. Now, looking forward or looking ahead, how do you see talent optimization evolving over the next, say, 5 to 10 years? And what should leaders be doing now to prepare for this?
Yeah, I think that it's being proactive around understanding your organization and the talent that you have, making sure that your organization is adaptable. And I think part of that is understanding who you have on the team. And I think the future will be about predictability in your hiring, using AI for predictive analysis, maybe proactive on how retention's going or engagement's going in your organization. And so taking advantage of all of the technology and science around people and data in your organization, because the age-old saying is that the people are your business. It's just that if your people are happy, your customers are happy, your board's happy and engaged, and you're productive, and it's a better place for everyone.
Completely. Totally agree. Yeah. And I was thinking back one more thing before I'm going to actually shift us into some lightning round questions and then wrap up. But you were mentioning when we were talking about AI earlier, how important it is for people to understand how roles in organizations can be enhanced by AI. They don't necessarily have to be replaced. And I'm just wanting to point out a reference on the podcast. I recently interviewed Pascal Bornet, who's an AI expert, and he wrote a book that I like to recommend. It's called Irreplaceable. And it really talks about how organizations can help their people make the difference in terms of understanding ways they can leverage this new technology to make their own role more valuable to the organization. So yeah. Do you have any other final thoughts on that?
No, but I'm going to pick up that book for sure. So
yeah, it's a really yeah, really good read. Yeah. So I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, that's great. And I do think that in some roles where AI seems to be more prevalent, like say user support, for example, and we've talked to our people about like, this is going to actually make your jobs better because you're no longer going to be answering like, what's my password? How do I reset it? And you actually add more value, more impact and you can and spend your time on actually and helping customers in a better way. So there's tremendous ways I think that AI is going to be used in the workplace, and I'll definitely look forward to reading more about it.
Absolutely. Okay, you ready for the lightning round?
Okay.
They're pretty easy questions.
Okay.
First one, Jackie, is what are you most grateful for?
Let's see. I am grateful for a lot of things. I'm grateful for the opportunity I've had at PI. It's really been a great experience. I love our science. I think that when I was first introduced to PI, it was a requirement everywhere I went afterwards. I just think it's a great tool. And I will say I'm so grateful for my team that I work directly with. We use our science in everything we do, but it is the people that make PI a great place to work. And I think that my team is a big part of that. And so I'm grateful that they show up the way they do every day.
What is the most difficult leadership lesson you've learned over your career?
I think that is what I thought was listening wasn't listening. And I had someone point it out to me. And it kind of goes back to this is bigger picture where we're talking about surveys and defending things away. I'm naturally inclined to just speak and not necessarily always be so thoughtful about what I say. But as you become a leader, it's so important to just be quiet and to not interject and really let the conversation happen without you. So I think the lesson is bite your tongue and listen.
I love that. And I've mentioned this phrase a lot on this show, but it's one of my favorites, which is, are you listening to reply or are you listening to understand? Mm-hmm. And if we're all doing a better job listening to understand, everything goes better, right?
I love that. And that is a more articulate way to say exactly what I've learned. So
who is one person you would interview if you could, living or not?
Oh, this is anyone who knows me, I would interview Serena Williams. I think she is an amazing athlete, an amazing business person, an inspiration. And I would love to sit down and have lunch with her. And I said this a lot of times, so hopefully one day she's listening and give a call. So
she's an incredible human being, isn't she, overall?
Yes.
Yeah. Not only a peak performer, but just an all-around very good person. So yeah, love that pick. Do you have a top book recommendation you'd like to share with our listeners? Anything you've read that's been meaningful?
Sure. Well, I will do a little plug here for my boss, Mike Zani. He wrote a book called Dream Teams, and it's all about building and designing high-performing teams. It's based on his learnings from when he was a sailing coach all the way through today and gives real practical ideas and tools to use in building winning teams. So it's Dream
Fantastic.
Teams by Mike Zani.
Okay, great. We'll put a link to the book in our show notes. So if you're interested, listeners, you can find it there. And then Jackie, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh boy, this is a hard one. The best piece of advice I've ever gotten. I'll go back to my first boss, Nancy. And I think that early on, she really taught me how to tell a story and bring people along a journey, which I just think is really important in everything I do today, whether it's an employee relations story or a presentation, is people tend to like start where they are versus give the context, bring a lot of the other dynamics in full understanding. Get all of the full understanding and the context in order to do that. So that's what I would say is really start from the beginning, bring all the context in.
And Nancy changed your trajectory, didn't she?
She did. And just a funny story, we've lived geographically different. I'm in Rhode Island, she's in Massachusetts, and she just recently retired, but her office built an office right down the street from me. So we were able to have lunch together.
Oh,
so
fun.
It was full circle. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Well, Jackie, you've given us so much to think about and so much wisdom today. I would love it if you take a minute just to synthesize the most important takeaways for our listeners.
Sure. I think that using behavioral data in your organization, not only for hiring, but for understanding how people work well together to inspire them, how to build teams and to continually diagnose that is going to help your organization win. And I think that starts with self-awareness and understanding the impact that you have on other organizations. And the use of behavioral science is a proactive way to prevent turnover and really create an engaged, productive workforce.
Jackie Doobie, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Human Capital. If you like this show, please tell your friends and also take the time to go rate and review us. Human Capital is a production of Goalspan, your integrated source for performance management. Now go out and be the inspiration to other humans, and thank you for being human, kind.